Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing Millennial Ben.
Presented by Brakes Plus. When last we left you, Mark was trying to do math.
You got about, with DMAX theory, 60% of the time you're going to fail. It's like Sex Panther. His quarterback theory should be, we're going to retitle it right now.
Okay. Cause I got the khaki pants theory. What's his?
His is Sex Panther. 60% of the time, it fails every time. We changed it around a little bit, but it's Sex Panther.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Coach, did Josh Allen... Oh, I'm sorry.
Hold on. If you're telling me that the best thing to come out of this week is that we've now given his quarterback theory a name, the Sex Panther QB theory?
Yes.
Oh, this week is beautiful. This is beautiful.
It's the
Sex Panther QB theory. Yeah. I love it.
60% of the time, it fails. Every time. Sex Panther. I mean,
made my day.
Yeah.
Boom, I'm done.
We figured it out.
Mashed potatoes and gravy.
Right, Let's figure it out. D-Max theory is Sex Panther.
Oh, and then we're getting the defenders. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. what the hell is that? Okay. Tell me how many guys are going to be allowed to continue to play in the NBA and NHL in which they miss 99 of their first 100 shots. Huh? Really?
Right. Yeah.
And the bit about, hey, listen, be aggressive, take chances. Again, if we saw signs that teams were willing to do that outside of what Arizona did, then I'd maybe start to buy into it. But nobody's doing that. Instead, you have teams like the Denver Broncos who try to make it work with Paxton Lynch when we all knew it wasn't, to the point where they set up a sham of a preseason week in San Francisco where the fix was in. The fix was in to give him every opportunity to win the job, and he still failed. That's the way franchises, until further notice, until you see more evidence that it's changing, that's the way these franchises operate. They're paralyzed. They draft one of these guys, and they are going to move heaven and earth to try to make it work for ego, for job security, whatever.
Correct.
When we all know it's not going to work. So stop with this bit about, well, the beauty of doing this is that if it doesn't work out, you can just quickly move on to the next guy.
Nobody,
where's the proof?
Right. Nobody
does. Where's the proof
does.
Anybody does that? Sex Panther theory.
Sex Panther. That's it. It's the new doctrine.
Oh,
it's called,
my goodness.
Just draft a quarterback in the top 10. As long as he's in the top 10, just draft him. That's Sex Panther.
Sex Panther. That is actually cooler than my khaki pants theory.
It's really good.
It's much cooler.
It's a really
it's much,
good theory.
It's much more evocative and provocative and sexy.
Yes. And all the occatives.
All the occatives.
You put any occative, any occative you want in there.
Any occative.
It covers all occatives. So.
Because the Broncos have been so successful by not drafting QBs. I agree. They should be in the market of drafting a quarterback every single year in rounds 2 through 4. And here's the most important thing. See, a lot of these quarterbacks don't work out that get drafted up in the top 5, and what ends up being the biggest excuse? Well, they weren't developed properly. They didn't have the right kind of team around them. How about you do this? How about you put together an organization that has smart scouts, smart evaluators, a really good coaching staff made up of coaches who know the game and know how to develop talent, and then you go out and you find a quarterback that one of these smart coaches that knows how to coach and identify talent, like a Gary Kubiak who recognizes something in Dak Prescott, and you draft that guy and develop him and bring out all the things that your smart evaluator has seen potential for, and do that instead of just taking the shiny 6'7", big arm, mobile, look at all the potential with this guy, Paxton Lynch.
Yeah. Here's the deal for the guys. Oh yeah, because it's worked out so well for the Broncos. You like when they in a 4-year span went to 2 Super Bowls and won one of them, not drafting a guy.
By the way, very quick. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No.
Because we got Joel coming up. I gotta get to question mark.
Okay.
This is a good one. This is right up your alley. Mark, what do you think about the Rapids game tomorrow and their chance of winning the MLS Cup?
Couldn't care less.
Can you make this quick? I got a meeting.
Honestly, whenever anybody brings up the Rapids, and I hope they do well.
I hope they win a championship.
We can have a parade. But yeah. I find myself wondering, who's the Jamie Tott of the Rapids? Who's the Roy Kent of the Rapids?
I don't know what any of that means. Oh. I just know they're playing hard. They're scoring a lot of goals.
Ted Lasso. Yeah, right. Playing well, scoring a lot of goals.
Playing well, scoring a lot of goals.
Let us bring in Joel Klatt. Joel Klatt presented by Audi Flatirons. And Joel, I got to tell you, this show is tailor-made for you. It's a Wednesday, but it's our Friday. And because of that, we're getting loose.
Is it an all-balls football Friday?
Basically, that got banned too. Banned or not banned. But, so we're into our last hour. We're getting loose, and we can think of no better person to just drive this thing right to the finish line than joining up with you. Or off a cliff. Either way.
Good luck to the Rapids. I hope that they win. I mean, right? Like, I don't want to be condescending. I hope that they win. I think parade might be overboard. If they win, maybe we can have a potluck. But nonetheless, I hope that they win.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's like, hey, I didn't know they were playing. But, hey, congratulations.
Uh-huh. Right.
Good for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, Mark, you should have like a caller number 5. If you can name a Rapid, we'll give you $50.
I can't name one. But I'm rooting for them.
Yeah.
Let's go, Rapids.
That doesn't mean I'm not rooting for them either. Everyone's like, you're such a jerk. No, I'm rooting for them heartily. And then I'll give them a sleeve of golf balls and say, you're welcome. You built yourself on the back of real football.
Hey, what did you think of the Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick signings?
I mean, if you don't have a quarterback, none of it matters. So I'm... You know, wake me up when we decide to make a move, whether it's in the draft or otherwise, that actually puts someone in that position that's going to get us to a playoff. I think that's kind of my thought, right? So that's great. Listen, the rest of the roster, you got to have a good roster, and I don't want to be, you know, nonchalant about it, but I think that what this year has proven is that all that money that was spent in the secondary and all of that doesn't matter, because unless you've got like the coaching staff that you need, unless you've got a complementary game plan that's going to accentuate your strengths and mitigate your weaknesses, and unless you have a quarterback that you really believe can go out there and at times put the team on their back and drive them down the football field if you need first downs, if you need a score, then I don't know if it matters, right? So I don't want to mitigate what is or could be thought of as quality signings and certainly some young players that have done nice things. I just, you know how I feel about wide receivers. Let's be honest. Like that, they're the lowest on the totem pole on the offense. You should never, ever in football, ever hang your hat on the fact that like, hey, we got great receivers. Fine. Who cares if you can't get them the ball?
I completely agree with that. You know, our little buddy in the afternoon is always talking about D-Max, is always talking about, hey, just draft a quarterback in the first. As long as you get one in the top 10, then you've got a chance. I just went through 2015, 16, 17, 18, and 19. Out of all the quarterbacks drafted, 9 of them are what you would consider busts, and 4 of them are actually panning out and working. So my question to you, I renamed his theory, you know, his just draft a quarterback, any quarterback as long as it's in the top 10, I named it the Sex Panther theory of drafting quarterbacks. 60% of the time, it fails every time. So we just call it Sex Panther now. So like, from an evaluation standpoint, and the Broncos need this, how are you gonna, like, if you're in charge, how do you evaluate and how do you, you know if a guy, or at least you have a better chance of a guy actually walking out of college and being NFL caliber?
Well, that's a great question. It's really difficult. And I think the teams that do it well are ones that generally have enough around the quarterback from a structural standpoint, from a consistency of staff standpoint, from an identity standpoint, that player doesn't have to come in and be everything to everyone from a rookie standpoint. And, you know, even with the last answer that I gave, yes, you have to have that guy. But if you're going to rely on a young quarterback, you better make sure that, in particular, you're solidified from a coaching standpoint and from an identity standpoint. Because a lot of those guys that you referenced there who have failed in the top 10 failed because they went to teams that felt like they had to draft that guy because they were up against a wall. Their roster is terrible. Their identity is bad, which is why they're in that position in the first place. And a lot of them still had the same staff that put them in that position. So, you know, that can be a lose-lose, if you will. And we've seen a lot of quarterbacks go to places and fail because everything around them has been really terrible. Meanwhile, some of the guys that have succeeded were guys that didn't get drafted up high, and they were in the, you know, middle of the first round or even late in the first round. They went to teams and organizations that did have an identity and a more solidified coaching staff, and they had a little bit of a better roster. So that's where you look at this team and you think to yourself, okay, what do you have around the quarterback? I would suggest that the roster is actually not bad. The thing that I question is this really the coaching staff that you're going to move forward with a young quarterback? With this offensive game plan that we see every single week? With this head coach who seems completely inept at game management, even though he's been in the league for his entire life? You know, those are the things that I would question. And I don't want to be a negative Nancy here, but no, you can't just say you got to draft a quarterback. It's got to be in the top 10 regardless. That player has got to fit who you are and what you are. And more importantly, you've got to know who you are and what you are. And I don't know if the Broncos really understand those things, in particular on the offensive side right now.
Well, I know I'm going to serve up a big old meatball to you in your kitchen here for you to hit out, but talk to me from a quarterback's perspective about why receivers play a dependent position and why quarterbacks, good quarterbacks, elite quarterbacks, make below average receivers average, make average receivers above average, and make above average receivers great.
Well, it's a great question. There's a lot of layers to that. Let me start with this. And Mike, you and I sat in this press conference in Indianapolis when the Patriots faced the Giants in the Super Bowl. We had worked together for, like, I don't know, 37 minutes at the time.
Mm-hmm.
My youngest son had just been born. We went and covered that Super Bowl, and we went to Bill Belichick's press conference, and he was asked about wide receivers. And in particular, the fact that they, outside of Randy Moss that year, you know, never really had this, like, wide receiver core that was exceptional. And he boiled it down very quickly in that Super Bowl press conference to two things that a wide receiver needs to do. He says, I don't really care about a wide receiver's. Do you get open and do you catch the ball? And half of that, really both of those things, can be taken care of to some extent by the quarterback, because the quarterback can make larger windows out of tight windows. And when you're putting the ball on time and on target, you're making it much easier for that player to make the catch. So you're mitigating his responsibility in terms of creating space, and you're mitigating his responsibility as it relates to catching the football. Then you just go to kind of the totem pole, the hierarchy of what has to happen on any given play in order for that play to have success or those individuals to have success. If you're going to throw the football, you've got to have the offensive line understand the protection and then make any adjustments needed or necessary based on the stunts and the movement of the defense. So that's number one. All those guys have to do their job. Minimum five, usually sometimes like six or seven, depending on the protection and how you're actually going to identify it. Then the quarterback has to understand and recognize, diagnose the defense, and then on his timing and on proper timing, put the ball in the proper place in order for that wide receiver to have success. Then that ball has to be on time. It has to be on target. And then after all of that, it's like, well, I guess did the wide receiver go out there and win? It's a luxury. It's the frosting on the cake. everything else has to be good before that guy can really make a contribution. Great. So let's say you're terrible on the offensive line. You have a below average quarterback, but you've got this insane receiver that you paid a lot of money. And so he goes out there and he creates space and he's wide open and your quarterback is on his back. Well, then who the F cares what he's doing on the outside? Oh, and by the way, those guys generally have the worst attitude in the locker room of anybody on the team and are going to cry about who's getting the ball and when and all this flash and blah, blah, blah. That's why all that distraction is the best way to be defeated. So why am I going to bring all that distraction when it doesn't really matter in the first place in terms of the hierarchy of performance? You got to understand why things are successful and why they aren't successful. And the last thing in the world that you need to be paying for is some diva wide receiver. And I'm not saying these two guys are diva wide receivers, and I'm not saying that you should have to never pay a wide receiver. All I'm saying that you don't need to do any of that unless you're solidified up front and you're solidified at the quarterback position.
Like I said, Mark,
yeah.
I knew he hit it about 450 feet.
What wide receiver hurt you? Which one hurt you?
None of them. I actually had really, good guys at that position. I really like those guys a lot. I had my first year starting Derek McCoy and DJ Hackett, excellent players. Mm-hmm. Played with Jeremy Bloom, who was a wide receiver. And now Bloom wasn't all that keen to, actually know the playbook. Quick story about Bloom. He was just a flat gamer, man. The dude was one of the best, if not the best athletes I've ever been around. And I was around Reggie Bush at times in New Orleans, right? But Bloom, there was something magical about Jeremy Bloom. And it wasn't just his, it was he was amazing on the field. So this guy comes in and what we used to do is signal the formation and the movement. So it would be some sort of movement, right? So you could explode to east right zip, and then you'd run something out of that. And so I'd get the formation, explode to east right zip, and then the wide receiver used to run in and be like, okay, it's 200 jet x logo check, 96 power or whatever. So it's a two-prong play depending on the safety or whatever. We're gonna either throw the ball or we're gonna run the ball. Basically, if I get a one-on-one with the x and we throw the slug out, he comes in as the x. A sluggo is a slant and go. It goes to the outside. It's basically like a fade or a go route with a little slant fake off of it. And he comes in and he's sluggo power. And I'm that's not really a concept, but I put it together. I'm like, okay, 200 jet X. So I put it all together. And then breaking down, I'm like, on one, right? And we clap and then we break in the huddle. And he runs out of the huddle and he looks back at me and he's just like, hey, watch me over the middle. And I was like, no. And then he just runs out there, and I'm shouting, walking up to the line of scrimmage, Jeremy! Slugo! I'm screaming, not in the middle! And now I'm panicked, right? Just anxiety-stricken, and I'm looking at him like, where's he going to be? I've got no idea where he's going to be. And so I'm thinking to myself, should I just check the 96 power? Because, that's my safe. That's why, hey, if you're in doubt, just run 96 power. It's a tank play. We'll gap scheme it, block down, kick out. Here we go. And then I think to myself, no, that's Blue Steel out there. You give him the damn rock wherever he wants the rock. And so sure enough, boy, Red 200! Here we go! We're running Red 200. Where's the X gonna be? No friggin' clue. So I drop back 3 steps and he just runs his butt right through the middle of the field with his hands up like he thought, hey, his logo's right over the middle. I throw him the ball, he catches it and runs for a touchdown. No joke. He comes back to the sideline, we're high-fiving, Gary Barnett grabs my arm and goes, you changing the plays out there? And I was like, no! Jeremy told me he was going to run over the middle. He looks at Jeremy. Now Jeremy's standing right in front of him, and he goes, nice play, Bloom. And that was it.
That might
awesome.
Be the single greatest story I've ever heard.
Unbelievable.
Oh, my God. I'm open over the middle.
So, no, they didn't hurt me. They just gave me heart attack.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That's great.
I'm running over the middle. I have no clue what the defense is, no clue what the play call is, but I'm feeling salty.
I felt like I was back on the Sierra Elementary fields, fifth grade, just with the old red and black Nerf ball. Your buddy was just like, hey, man, I'll run over the middle. And I'm like, yeah. We got him.
Hey, Joel, listen, I got to ask you a quick question because this, I need your perspective on this. I'm studying the Giants right now, which is, It's like kind of like watching the Broncos, only worse. There's not one thing that I can tell you that they do well. They do nothing well. Like they'll get in like two tights, like West Slot, and they'll have a 7-man protection, 2-man route, you know, maybe a back leak out late out of the backfield, right, to get three guys in the pattern. And they'll give up sacks on it. I mean, just like the split tight ends, and they're just awful. They're horrible. But they are about the most static team I watch on film. They line up in it and they stay. You know, they may short motion, you know, one tight end across the field and getting solo or whatever. But they're about as static as anybody I watch. When you're that static, is it the quarterback? Is it the players that don't understand motions or can't get, or is it the coaching? Like, why would you be that static in today's game?
Got to be a combination of all of it. I don't have any idea why you would be that static. And I don't think that you've got to move around like Gruden style. I know Kyle Shanahan moves around a lot, and I know you guys used to in the late 90s. You guys were one of the first teams to like really get after it as far as like the shifts, then the motion. But the bottom line is this, is that in any given snap or in any given series, when you're on the field, there is one unit that is the aggressor, and then there is one unit that is reactive. And as an offense, one of the ways that you can be the aggressor and put the defense on their heels is by moving, change the strength. People have no idea how important it is which side the defense calls the strength. It's one of the reasons why two tight ends just lining up on each side is so difficult for the defense. It's because you don't have a defined strength to your offense in the run game. So they've got to pick one. And when they have to pick one, that creates a little bit of indecision. When you're changing your strength with a shift or a motion, and more so a shift, then motioning, you can create all sorts of advantages from a personnel standpoint, but as well as a schematic standpoint via leverage. And if you understand leverage and you understand things like contain players and support of the defense, you can put guys in conflict really easily with just a few different shifts and motions. And if you don't do that, either your players can't handle it or you don't understand how to do that. Now, I don't know which one it is for the Giants, but I will tell you that when you just sit there static, you better be incredible. There was a team, you know, the Colts used to be fairly static with Peyton Manning. They were being like 11 personnel a lot of the times and run kind of like this wing formation. But they would be static because Peyton's mind, he was carving the defense before the snap. And they would run just a few concepts and little adjustments off that concept. And so it didn't matter what you were going to run. They were going to adjust off that. But if you don't have that level of surgeon at quarterback, like a Brady or a Manning or a Rodgers, then you've got to move in order to gain the leverage necessary in order to put players in conflict, whether it's in the passing game or in the running game. And if you don't do that, I to be honest, I just think it's a miss.
All right, you've got Ohio State and Michigan. Can't wait for this one. Boy, Ohio State looked dominant. Did they dominate enough in a fashion that makes you think that Michigan has no chance again against Ohio State, or how do you see it?
Listen, it's going to be tough. They've recruited at a high level. Speaking of Ohio State, higher than Michigan, and it's one of those situations where Ohio State, when they're allowed to play their style of game, there is no beating them at all. You can't sit there and let Stroud sit there in the pocket and not get pressured. So what team is going to have a chance against them? Well, a great pass rushing team. It just so happens that Michigan is one of, if not the best pass rushing team in college football. They've got these two outside linebacker style defensive ends that they stand up, David Ajabo on one side, Aiden Hutchinson on the other, that each have double digit sacks. So if you're going to build a defense to go specifically against Ohio State, you would basically build Michigan's defense, which is fascinating in this first year for their guy, Mike McDonald, who comes from the Baltimore Ravens under John Harbaugh. I'm talking myself into Michigan having a chance, but boy, I mean, I've done too many of these games to know that when Ohio State wants to win this game, and generally they do badly, they will. They're that good, and I can't wait to see how it all plays out.
All right, Joel. Cincinnati creeps in. I mean, that's always fun. I'm sure they'll get booted out of the top four.
Oh, you know, the powers that be are desperately rooting for East Carolina to pull off an upset just so they can get Notre Dame in there, and then or they're hoping that Michigan wins, because if Michigan wins, then here's a great question: if Michigan wins, they definitely will vault into the top four. Would it be enough to knock Ohio State out of the top four, or do we just be looking at Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, and Michigan?
Yeah, Ohio State would be totally knocked out. They would have two losses. They would not have won their division nor played for a conference title. They would be done. So Michigan would have a chance with a win in the Big Ten championship game to go to the playoff. So this game is massive. There's no doubt. So basically, I think there's a spot for the Big Ten champion in the playoff. Georgia's probably already in. If Alabama wins the SEC, they would be in. And it looks like Cincinnati and the Big 12 champs, so long as the Big 12 champ only has one loss, would be the teams that would be kind of under debate. Now, if the Big 12 champion were to have two losses, now you get into, like, is Notre Dame also going to go, which is fascinating to me.
Joel, have a very happy Thanksgiving. I know it'll an abbreviated one this weekend with you traveling, but that beautiful family of yours that I know you're so thankful for, we are thankful that you join us each and every week. It's the best segment that we do every single week. We thank you so much.
Well, shoot, guys, man, I'm thankful as well for you guys. I appreciate you bringing me on. I know we like to bring the snark. And I appreciate all the listeners out there, too, because I hear you guys on social media. You're such a jerk.
You love it. Thank you, Joel. There he goes. Joel Klatt, presented by Audi Flatirons. It goes from bad to worse for the Nuggets, the latest. Sandy Clough will join us next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com. HMotors.com.
Fascia Cabella.
There he is.
Let it go, man.
Sandy Clough, who is the shut up! Host extraordinaire of our Avalanche and Nuggets postgame shows. Nuggets last night, Avalanche tonight. You'll hear it as soon as the final horn goes. And Sandy joins us to talk about what's going on with the Nuggets right now. It goes from bad to worse as now PJ Dozier out reportedly with a torn ACL. Sandy, just how dangerous a time is it right now for the Nuggets and the way their season is shaping up?
A very dangerous time, because there's the simple idea that you're asking various players to assume greater responsibility, maybe do things they're not used to doing. PJ Dozier got hurt around the basket last night. He's really not that kind of player. He's a long-distance jump shooter, and he's doing things around the basket that he's not used to doing, at least not in game competition. And I think often injuries arise from that, from guys trying to do more than they're physically able to do. Some people are playing extended minutes beyond which, well beyond which they usually play. They're in trouble, and there isn't much they can do to remedy the situation. It isn't as if you can go out and sign a bunch of replacements right now. The only bit of good news is that Jokic did warm up last night and would seem almost certain to be available for Friday night's game with Milwaukee. But they're in such bad shape that the TNT crew is asking Jamal Murray about how quickly he could come back. And, of course, he's months away from a return from his own torn ACL sustained late last year.
And tell me, you know, the whole Joker thing, you know, with the wrist injury, like, how concerning is that? Is that one of those things in your mind, you've been covering this game for a long time, can be troublesome throughout the rest of the year? Could that be something that hinders him for a long-term situation?
If they bring him back too soon, Mark, it could. You're the expert on rehabbing from injuries of all kinds. So I would always defer to you on these matters. But, you know, getting accurate injury information out of the Nuggets is kind of like pulling teeth. I mean, you're more likely to hear more about hockey injuries than you are about some of these injuries the Nuggets have. I mean, Sunday, he was at one point during the afternoon listed as probable for the Phoenix game. Then he went from probable to questionable. He didn't play. Last night, I guess he was close, but they didn't want to risk it. But you're right in assuming that for a basketball player, a sprained wrist, that's a big deal. That affects your shooting. That affects your rebounding. That affects your defensive play overall. I can't think of another way to say it. He could have two broken wrists, and he'd still find a way to be a great passer, I suspect.
Sandy, the Michael Porter Jr. contract, which is now looking really scary with what Porter has, another back issue. I'm curious. I'm not against the idea of them giving him a rookie extension when he was eligible for it, but why in a league in which you had guys, rookies like Jaren Jackson, who got 4 years, $100 million, Bridges with the Suns, 4 years, $90 million, Wendell Carter, 4 years, $50 million, why the Nuggets felt they had to go and give him the Supermax, which was, you know, 5 years with a max of 207?
I am equally perplexed as to the reason they did that. We know they love their young players. The players they drafted, especially, and that would include Jokic and Murray and Porter, they tend to believe in their young players, often to a fault. If what Austin Rivers said a few days ago is true, he was injured even at the time he signed that contract. And wouldn't you think the Nuggets would have known about that? That his back has been an issue. Remember, it stiffened up during the playoffs last year. And Rivers said he's been experiencing back pain all year long, even when he was playing. And we all know he didn't look right. We all know that. And if the Nuggets weren't aware of that, and also any time, by age 23, a guy's had a couple of back surgeries. You've got to seriously consider the wisdom of giving him that kind of deal. I don't have any problem with their drafting Michael Porter. I never did. I know you two guys never did. But I think, you know, especially if he has a third surgery, I said for other reasons about a month ago that they should trade him. Maybe they should have thought about trading him when his value was at its highest at the end of last year or even a little bit before that. Now they're stuck. You can't move that contract. I'm sure they're insured, but you can't move that contract. And at this point, you really have to wonder about his future, at least his long-term future. And getting hard information again on this kind of injury about the Nuggets haven't issued anything remotely official or specific about the nature of this injury. I guess it's acknowledged that he's in Florida right now seeking other opinions, but that's one of the big mysteries in Denver sports right now, whether Michael Porter has a future here or not.
All right, Sandy, have a very happy Thanksgiving. We are thankful for everything you do for us, and have some fun. Eat a lot of turkey, please, okay?
All right. Thanks to you two guys. Very thankful for you two.
Thank you. Sandy. There he goes. Bow chicka bow wow.
Bow chicka bow wow.
Great Sandy Clough, man.
It's never a good thing. It's never a good thing if that report is true about Michael Porter Jr. being in Florida seeking other opinions. It's never a good thing when you start seeking other opinions.
Because you're in denial and you're just hoping to find somebody who will agree with you?
Well, no, it's just that things aren't going well. So now, like, nothing you're doing is working. So now I'm going to go outside the organization and see if there's anything else out there. It's it to me, it's kind of almost one of those, one of two things. Either you don't trust the people that are advising you, or now you're looking for, you know, anything. Like, now you're grasping at straws. Like, conventional medicine is not working. So, you know, now where do I go?
We are going into our last segment of the week on this Is It Just Me Friday on a Wednesday, which means we have to do our fearless Bronco predictions. We'll do that coming up next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Prediction? Yes, prediction.
Pain. The dread stinks!
Denver Broncos Pick of the Week is presented by King Soopers, the official grocery sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Seems kind of weird sitting here on a Wednesday. Game isn't until Sunday, but here we go. What's your pick for Broncos Chargers?
Broncos Chargers. I'm going to go ahead and take the Chargers. I just think they're a better overall football team, Mike. So I'm taking the Chargers. And pick wise, I mean, let's face it. What are the Broncos score? 17-ish. That's usually where they are. So let's just talk. Let's just make it. And they have a propensity under Vic Fangio to lose by double digit scores at home. So, and, you know, they got flexed to Kansas City, so we're probably working on Kansas City game plans as we speak. I'm gonna call it 31-17 Chargers.
I'm not prepared to trust the Chargers yet. I know, ooh, new coach, Brandon Staley, but there's too much history of Chargers gonna Charger.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they beat Pittsburgh last week. With a quarterback who hadn't practiced all week and still went out and had a heck of a game. Still gave up 27 points in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that had lost three of their last four. So I can't base this on anything else other than the wacky week to week, can you believe that just happened, nature of the NFL. And the fact that I don't totally trust the Chargers. So how about this? I'm going to take the Broncos 23-20.
Wow.
And what was your score?
I went 31-17.
31-17. The Chargers are a better team.
Correct.
You're not going to get an argument from me. Chargers are a better team. But I don't trust them. No, I don't trust the Broncos either. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, file this one away under just the randomness of the NFL. The Broncos coming off their bye week. I think they will have a rejuvenated energy. I don't know how much they really believe in themselves, but I think that having a week off will allow them to at least kind of, you know, trick themselves into believing that they have a chance and buy into the idea that, hey, their whole season is still out in front of them and five games in the division and all that. I think they'll actually come out believing all that.
Well, we'll
feed off that for a time.
We had the Andy Reid, 20-3 coming off his bye week. What's Vic Fangio coming off his bye week? You know, he's had two of them so far?
Two. All right. Hold on. This is a fun game.
Yeah. I like this. We haven't had Everything music, so. It's always fun to have some efforting music.
All right, so we're looking first at 2019, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
2019. Here we go. The 2019 schedule had the Broncos going into their bye week with a 24-19 win over the Browns. That was with Brandon Allen, remember?
Okay, yeah, the gamer.
The gamer, that led to the gamer. Then they had their bye week, then they came out of that bye week playing at Minnesota. Remember that game?
Yes.
Raced out
to a big lead.
Big lead. They were up 20-0 at the half.
Mm-hmm.
And then they proceeded to gain, what was it, 8 inches per play?
Yes, something like
in
that.
In the second half? Kirk Cousins heated up. They lost 27-23. So that was
their 0-1.
Their 0-1 after one bye week.
Okay,
so
now 2020.
2020. Oh, 2020.
Oh.
What a year, 2020. All right, 2020 bye week. They had their bye week early. They came out of the Jets game. Again, a backup quarterback leading the way to a big win. Brett Rippin.
Yes.
Had their bye week, came out of it, and went to New England and won.
What?
18-12.
Whoa.
That was the sixth field goal game. Brandon McManus, good from 45, 44, 27, 52, 20, and 54.
Red zone on point.
But they shut down Cam Newton, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone loves Cam these days. Shut down Cam. Drew Lock in that game was 10 of 24 for 189 yards and two interceptions. Robust.
Yes.
Cam was 17 of 25 for 157 yards, no touchdowns and two picks. But, Oh, no.
What happened?
Oh, boy. You know what the consequences of this is going to be.
What's that?
Here we go. In that game, Philip Lindsay.
Ooh.
23 carries for 101 yards.
Okay.
Bring him back. He's out there. Bring him back.
Why wouldn't you?
Right.
Why wouldn't you?
Be the perfect compliment to Javonte Williams.
Perfect.
And so they're going to move on from Melvin. Bring him back.
Makes perfect
sense.
Sounded
like a futures contract.
Yeah,
for
next
year.
Our guy, Vic, is 1-1 off of bye.
1-1 after buys. Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody asked, what is the name of the Efferdine music song? That would be the Geico commercial.
Yeah,
right?
The Geico.
The caveman
Geico
one.
Caveman commercial. All right.
By the way, the you miss 100% of the shots you don't take quote that you mocked was from Wayne Gretzky. Yeah, well, if Wayne Gretzky's taking the shots, I'm going to trust him to take the shots. If Josh Rosen is taking 100% of the shots, no, I don't want Josh Rosen taking 100% of the shots you don't take. No.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
No.
Let's not put the greatest hockey player of all time.
The greatest of all time.
Let's not
take his philosophy and just spread it out to everybody, okay?
Just spread it out to you know, Sex Panther. Okay? That doesn't apply to Sex Panther.
No, it doesn't. So, 1-1 after buys. All right. Well, we'll see if Vic Fangio, who is coaching his last year with the Broncos, ends up being a winning or losing coach coming out of buys. This will be the tiebreaker.
This will be it. So he'll always have that. If he can win, he's like, hey.
I heard the afternoon boys. Good conversation. See, I say nice things about D-Man. They had a good conversation yesterday about how Vic Fangio can, save his job. And Tyler said.
That doesn't sound like a good conversation. Just sounds like a nightmare.
Well, no, Tyler said there's absolutely no way he can save his job unless he makes the playoffs. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the converse of that is, do you see any way, if he made the playoffs, that he wouldn't be back here next year? And they raised the theory, what if they just come out blazing after this this bye week and win like 5 in a row, right? Get to 10-5 and then lose the last two games of the regular season to go 10-7. But still make the playoffs, but then get beat in the first round of the playoffs. So you end the season almost Tebow-esque. You know, Tebow lost the last three games of the regular season, and then they won the playoff game, but then got blown out. And, you know, they were looking for his replacement, which they got in PFM. But what about that scenario? What about that scenario that you could still make the playoffs, but finish, in a way, the regular season and the playoff game to the point where you still don't bring them back?
I just don't think there's any way even if you make the playoffs, you bring him back. No.
But if he makes the playoffs?
No.
Oh, no, wait a minute, Mark. You're asking this team to do something they haven't done in 5 years. Go on
win?
A stretch. Right.
Win?
Right. And go on a stretch where they win five, let's
obviously
say.
They haven't won here in 5 years.
They go on a stretch where they win five of their last seven games. Okay. Now, nobody believes it's going to happen, but let's just step into that world. If it were to happen, let's face it, they would be winning games against opponents and doing it in a way, being coached in a way that would would blow us all away. You'd have to be impressed by it. Now, nobody believes it can happen based on everything that we've seen over the last couple of years, but I'm saying in order to have this fantasy, you're going to see things, and things are going to be done in a way that are going to make you a Vic Fangio fan.
Wrong.
Right.
They're going to... If that happens, it's in spite of, not because
Mark,
of.
You can't go on a run like we're talking about against these opponents in your division and have to overcome the coach at every single turn. No way. Now look, I don't think it's going to happen because of all the reasons you just laid out because of the coach, but I'm saying if it were to happen, it would be a revelation to the point where people would be like, huh?
I don't think I will.
I didn't think Vic had it in him, but apparently he did. I didn't think Teddy had it in him. Apparently he did.
Again.
I didn't think Pat Shurmur had it in him. Apparently he did.
Yeah, again, I would have to say in spite of, that would qualify under act of God.
Act of God, okay.
Yes. Yeah, that would qualify under act of, like, you know how sometimes they don't honor your, I don't know, I mean, it's like an insurance thing. Act of God. Like, there's nothing we could do about it.
All right, we're done. Thank you to everybody. We are so thankful for all of you great listeners. We are thankful for Millennial Ben, who's constantly in my ear yelling at me. I don't think I deserve this. I am thankful for you, Mark Schlereth, you big lug. I love working with you each and every single day here. So everybody have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll be back again with you on Monday. We've got Chad and Nate coming up with John Davis in for Chad. That's next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.